Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Soccer Talk Podcast. My name is Christopher Harris. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. It's been a couple of weeks, maybe 3 weeks since the last podcast. I know, Kartik, you've been busy writing for Beyond the 90, as well as many other things going on, as have I in terms of World Soccer Talk. But let's dive into a few different things, Kartik. There's a lot to talk about. I just got back recently from a visit to Germany, where I went to a RB Leipzig game against Borussia Dortmund in the Bundesliga. All right, Kartik, let's move on to the listener mailbag section. We've got a few comments here from some of our listeners. Zechariah says, I just wanted to share my perspective on why I have not purchased MLS Season Pass on Apple. As a Pacific Northwest footy fan who follows the Sounders, usually goes to at least two matches in person each season, was there for the 2019 MLS Cup. The stunt MLS pulled with the US Open Cup was insulting to the oldest soccer competition in North America. Toss in the fact that Seattle has not done well and the first half of the MLS season often doesn't matter. Why should I give Garber my money to enable his vendetta against the game in North America? My plan is to purchase a pass for MLS season pass after Leagues Cup, should I decide to actually give a flip about the season. If it goes on sale for half price, seeing the growth of USL, its commitment to US soccer, US Open Cup, and its availability on the platform that I already have, Spokane Velocity, are getting my evening soccer watching after Premier League mornings for now. P.S. I don't want to hear either of you, Eastern Time Zone era, complain about the 7:30 a.m. Saturday kickoff times for the Premier League. Don't worry, we won't complain about that. I'm happy, very happy with those times. But feel for you and others that have to get up even earlier. So, Kartik, there's an example of somebody that goes along exactly with what you've been saying, getting more into watching USL games and holding off on subscribing to MLS Season Pass.
Yeah, I'm picking up a lot of anecdotal evidence about that, and I can just tell you from my own experience of conversing about lower division soccer. It used to be like, who cares? It's a minor league type thing. And now it's people are genuinely interested in it. And this whole minor versus major league mindset in the United States is being broken down now at this point. Because what other minor league? I mean, are there AAA baseball games on over-the-air, free-to-air national television? I mean, are there tons of AAA baseball games on ESPN Plus and on CBS Sports Network? I can't. And ESPN2 actually also has USL games this summer. I can't find them. So there just seems to be these are the unintended consequences of MLS going with Apple. Right. Maybe we should have seen that leaving the door open would be something that USL, who I have been very critical of their inability to sell sponsorships and get on television previously, something that just absolutely benefited them. And we're seeing more and more evidence of it just from my own personal conversations and some of these comments we're getting in the mailbag each and every week.
Next up is Dan Floyd. Dan says, following a point that was made during your latest episode from a slightly different angle, MLS Season Pass suffers because that's all you get when you pay for it. The other side is how many people are likely subscribing to Paramount Plus, ESPN Plus, etc., for reasons that don't involve soccer, but are attracted to the added value of the soccer content. Most are not soccer first subscribers. Also, some of the way USL broadcast is expanding reminds me of the days when ESPN might show a midweek game for a lower college football conference. They crave the exposure, and it was a big event at those schools. I wonder if Golasso would have the opportunity to add Pluto channels for lower division soccer, NPSL, UPSL, etc., and maybe a Deportes-type channel that would feature Central American pro leagues, for example. That content could be very low cost in a free ad-supported model, a free ad-supported television model, and you make some sense. The league might just be excited for the exposure and could use it as a boost, as a way to boost engagement. Thanks for what you do. So there's another one, Kartik, that talks about in terms of basically USL. And what do you think? A lower college football conference?
Yeah. It's got the feel of, let's just say, the MLS is, MLS is not the SEC, the Premier League's SEC. Let's say MLS was the Big 12, and the American Conference or Conference USA is USL. They're now getting more exposure because the equivalent of the Big 12 has chosen to go exclusively to streaming and to a streaming partner that's not mainstream. I can't stress this enough. Apple TV Plus doesn't have the numbers or actually the kind of initiative to acquire things that that other streaming services do. I mean, the Peacock is another one which has pretty low numbers, although they're higher than Apple TV Plus. But they have done some things that have impressed industry analysts recently to say, okay, Comcast and NBC Universal, they're serious about making Peacock a player versus the Netflixes, versus the Amazon Primes, versus the Maxes and others. Apple TV has not done that. So, and again, that doesn't mean industry analysts are always right, because oftentimes they're not. But nonetheless, it's just not something that's in the mainstream. And you've got now, as Dan points out, you've got USL taking advantage of this, like one of those rogue, or if you want to call them rogue or lower tier conferences in college sports, which eventually became mainstream. I mean, you could argue that conferences like the American in college basketball have emerged because of their ESPN TV deal as viable players. So there are really a lot of things to consider here, and you can't make MLS was not in the market position maybe they thought they were in, or that their proponents think they're in, to where they could make this deal and be the trendsetter, as I said earlier in the show, and leave the door open for others.
Next up is Scott. Scott says, I love the podcast, and the most recent podcast brought me to this realization. For me, it comes down to one thing and one thing only, which will get me to watch and consider subscribing to MLS Season Pass. That one thing is a team in my local area of Detroit, Michigan. Adding stars such as Messi or Beckham to the league won't do it, even if MLS Season Pass was available on every streaming service for free. The lack of a team in the city state, in my city and state, is the main reason no one in this area follows the league. Until they do this, I will continue to follow the European leagues and will not follow MLS without a local team. USL is capitalizing on this with Detroit City FC and making them available to watch all games, either on local or national broadcasts. So, Kartik, I guess that there is that perception that, and this is in Miami too, in the Miami area, a lot of fans kind of felt before there was Inter Miami that we had no team, that we didn't have a local team. And what they mean by that, and I think Scott does too, is we don't have a team, but you do have a team, it's just not a Major League Soccer team. So, you mean USL, obviously a professional league with professional teams, but I felt that for a while from a lot of people, is that kind of when they talk about we don't have a professional soccer team, what they're saying is we don't have a professional MLS team. And I guess being Division One, with that comes that credibility, right? Kind of that level that people are striving for. But Scott's point about, you mean, if you don't have a local team, you mean, why should you or others bother watching MLS season pass?
Yeah, but it was a little backwards in South Florida because there were people who would watch MLS and not go and watch the local teams. And we always had a professional team locally. Don Garber himself, to his credit, said to the MLS to Miami folks, hey, you want MLS here? Go watch the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. Go support them. He said that publicly.
Yep.
To them.
Yep.
So I don't necessarily blame MLS for that, but I do, or don't blame Garber for that, but I do think MLS has created the perception, or had created the perception at that point, I should say, that they were the only pro soccer game. And that's going back to my time as NASL communications director, which I referenced earlier. That was my frustration. You know, we would have to try and tell people. At the time, we had a team in Atlanta and we had a team in Minnesota. Minnesota team ended up being the team that moved to MLS, actually. Hey, we are actually first division in your markets. And a lot of people are like, nah, we'll just wait for MLS. Now, what I see totally differently 10 years later is that is not the perception anymore in these markets. People in USL markets are saying, well, we have professional soccer. We're going to go watch our local USL team. Again, while that has been a long process, I do think it relates directly to the Apple thing, because I think USL had been trying to make the same points we made as NASL. Maybe they were having a little more success than we did because the market had become more mature. People understood the sport a little better. They understood you can have a second and third divisions in soccer, and it's not like AAA baseball or AA baseball in traditional American sports. And then MLS disappeared from their television screens. And USL was on their television screens, and it just added a level of credibility. To Chris's point, to Scott's point, this is a big part of the local team strategy for USL. I want to give the teams credit more than I want to give the league credit, although the league has facilitated some of it. I know a lot of our listeners think that streaming is everything, and I get a lot of people are cord cutters. I totally get that. But there are still tens of millions of people in this country who pay for cable subscriptions. Tens of millions of people pay for cable or satellite subscriptions. There are still people who watch local television. There are still people who don't necessarily watch regional sports networks, but watch local linear channels in their markets. And USL clubs have wisely positioned themselves to where they're on those stations. Detroit, the example Scott brings up, every single Detroit City game is on television. Every single one. If it's a national broadcast on CBS Sports Network or ESPN2 or CBS Over the Air, and Detroit's going to have a game on CBS Over the Air this year, by the way, against Phoenix, then it's not on the local broadcast, but it's on television. The rest of their games are all on their local CBS channel. So, and there are a couple teams with these sorts of television deals. Pittsburgh has one. Miami has one. Charleston has just signed one. Sacramento has a pretty good TV deal. Not all their games are on television, but a lot of their games are on television. Loudoun, which is in the D.C. market, has a pretty decent deal with their CW channel. Right. So all of this contributes to MLS's, to again, the opportunity cost of MLS going off of television and going to Apple. And I wish people who blindly defend the Apple deal and cite say that the numbers you cite, because even though they're real published numbers, are somehow need to have some kind of qualifier next to them, would understand this other side of the argument and what and again, it's a law of unintended consequences. This happens in economics all the time. This was an unintended consequence. By vacating television, they left the door wide open for USL. That's just the reality.
So before we go, before I read the last two comments in the listener mailbag, I do want to mention that when I was in Germany with fellow reporters, hanging out with them, talking about streaming, etc., the consensus was for those in the US, I think all of them or the majority of them said, basically what we do is we have ESPN Plus, Paramount Plus, and Peacock, and those three subscriptions. You mean, I don't know, depending on if you annual plan or monthly plan, whatever, super, super cheap in terms of the amount of soccer you get. And that they were happy with having those three and having access to almost everything. Conversely, speaking to some of the UK journalists and UK YouTubers and content creators, they were saying like, hey, we're paying like basically, I think about £100 a month to get access to Sky to be able to watch games. And then those of us in the US were like, that's crazy. We get ESPN Plus for $11 a month. We get Peacock for $5.99. We also get Paramount Plus for, I think, $5.99 also. So far, far cheaper. And then on top of that, too, we get access to more games than any of the people in the UK could ever dream of. So again, that MLS season pass wasn't even mentioned in those discussions in terms of like, hey, yeah, I have that too. And that's $99 a year, which in comparison to the UK for what they get is a bargain. But you would have to be a hardcore MLS fan of your local team, or be a fan, like a neutral fan that wants to watch, I mean, American soccer and to watch that, to really appreciate that and to get your money's worth. Because if you're a average soccer fan in the United States, I think I read a stat today that 48% of soccer fans in the United States have a favorite Premier League team. So what percentage of American soccer fans or soccer fans in America have a favorite MLS team or favorite La Liga team or Bundesliga team or Serie A team or, you mean, Liga MX team, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But 48%. So that's part of the issue too, is that, I mean, and we've talked about this before too, Kartik, and I don't want to go into it right now just because we have a couple more comments to go. But the Premier League has become so all consuming that it leaves very little room for the rest of the leagues, and it almost feels like they're trying to pick up scraps, whatever's left over, and fighting for that. I know we could do a whole podcast on that, but I won't right this second. Last two comments. The next one is Chris, and he says, based on my experience with MLS Season Pass over the past year, I have to say that the production quality is very good, unlike their Major League Baseball coverage, which is still having issues after 2 years. The biggest issue that I see with MLS Season Pass is the price point, $12 a month if you have Apple TV Plus, or $99 a season is too much for the casual or new to MLS fan to pay, and is actually a major turnoff for drawing them in, especially when they can watch other leagues at a significantly lower cost or even free. This is something that should concern MLS big time. And there's a real risk that Apple could become very disinterested in MLS, especially if the rights to other soccer leagues like the Bundesliga or other sports leagues like the NBA became available to them to bid on in the next few years, because they're more lucrative compared to MLS.
I am actually stunned, Chris, to your point you made a few minutes ago about the Premier League. I am stunned by the number of Mexican-American fans I know that are in their 20s or early 30s that have basically switched to the Premier League, that still follow whatever their Mexican club is, Cruz Azul, Club America. It's generally those two, the people I'm talking about. Yeah. Not many Chivas fans, but generally those two, they'll still follow their club, but they're not watching the Mexican League in general like they used to. And now they're all into the Premier League. So, yeah, I have my criticisms of the Premier League. I think everybody that listens to the show knows this, and I'm not the biggest Premier League fan, but I, you know, have to be an analyst. I have to be objective, and I think they've won the battle in this country. I mean, I think, as you said, they're now trying to pick up the scraps, and everybody else is trying to penetrate a market or push into a market which the Premier League already controls. So that's the reality. I mean, I'm even seeing it with fans of Liga MX, that they're flipping to the Premier League. And I have to think, we've talked a lot about USL taking MLS fans in this podcast. I have to think there's probably even more fans that since MLS went to Apple, have just switched to the Premier League because of, interestingly enough, NBC had thrown a lot of matches on Peacock, and they were showing less matches on NBC over the air until the Apple deal. In the last two seasons, we've seen an uptick in matches on NBC, and we're seeing fewer and fewer big matches on Peacock. I mean, the really big matches they're still doing it with, which annoys people, but still, generally every window that can have a match on USA, Chris, now does. And that wasn't the case two seasons ago. So, you know, you would have a Chicago PD or whatever it's called, you know, airing while there were Premier League matches on Peacock two seasons ago. That's not the case anymore. Right. Maybe they actually arbitrarily select, like they did last week. They selected another game instead of Liverpool Everton, which kind of annoyed me. And I had to watch Everton Liverpool on Peacock. But they recognized the situation. So I think that this is just all indicative of kind of a consolidation of much of the market in the United States behind the Premier League.
So in that visit to Germany, which was spectacular, I love German football, I love German culture. In those meetings I had with RB Leipzig and actually Dortmund too, I met with Dortmund also. One of the interesting things that came out of that was a surprise visit by MLS Commissioner Don Garber, who was visiting Germany to meet with Adidas, as well as to meet with RB Leipzig and their executives. So I had a chance, along with reporters from The Athletic, The Daily Mail, AFP, to sit down with Don Garber and ask him some questions. One of the questions I asked him was about his thoughts in regards to Javier Tebas's comments about wanting to play games in the U.S. And Tebas, for those who may not have seen it, Tebas had told a Spanish newspaper, I think it could be in the 2025-26 season, but La Liga will play official matches abroad. A official match in the U.S. will strengthen our position in the North American market, which is the second biggest market for La Liga after Spain. Now, when I asked Don Garber for his reaction and comments in regards to Tebas's statement, he politely declined to answer that, but he did say some other things, Carter. But I wanted to get your input on this too, because this is not just focused on La Liga. This is focused on what Major League Soccer is trying to do in the United States, which we've covered a little bit in more recent episodes. But he says, clearly, we all need to be very thoughtful about how our market develops so that everybody can be a winner. I really care a lot about those people that are investing in the game, doing the work, building the game for the next generation, investing in infrastructure and player development under the guidelines and requirements of our federation and confederation. I do like order. MLS is a very structured organization. We're very focused on good governance, and I'm looking forward to seeing how it evolves over the next period of time. He says the U.S. market is the most valuable commercial market in the world. That's creating opportunities for FIFA, CONCACAF, and clubs that are looking to expand their offices and perhaps play games in the United States. We are there in North America every day. We are not putting on a concert. We're in communities developing players. And that I take as a a negative remark about a lot of these summer friendlies coming to the United States and playing games here. Don Garber goes on to say, with 30 teams in the United States and Canada, we are the largest league in the world by a lot. We've also got the largest market in the world by a lot. Our opportunity is to lead a soccer nation. I think we've been a driver of creating the soccer nation in North America. And now we want to drive it in ways that will tell the rest of the world that we get the game and have great teams and compete at a high level and attract the best player in the history of the game against a lot of competition to come to our league. So Kartik, I mean, reading between the lines, right? Because a lot of the things that Don Garber says, if you go back and listen to them or read them a little bit later, you'll kind of understand what he's talking about. He's not gonna come out and attack La Liga. He's not gonna come out and attack the Premier League or any of these other leagues that are playing games or wanting to play games in the United States or playing friendlies in the United States. But he's also talking about protecting the investors in Major League Soccer and saying that that they're leading the soccer nation. What's your take on all of this? It's quite a lot to take in, but what's your initial thoughts?
Yeah,
on this,
there's a lot in here. I already read the article this morning, so the quotes don't surprise me. So one quote, which is factually incorrect, is he said, with 30 teams in the United States and Canada, we are the largest league in the world by a lot. Now, actually, they're not, because there are league systems that have more clubs. Okay, so the Football League in England has 74 clubs, right? I'm like, no, 72 clubs. The same thing, the DFL in Germany has more clubs. So that's actually factually incorrect. And actually, USL has more clubs. USL also advertises that they're the largest league in the world. I don't know if that's factually correct or not. There's more chance of it being factually correct in their case. I do think he does express some concerns of mine, parallel to my concerns about European leagues coming in here, European friendlies coming in here. MLS is in their communities every single day developing players. That is a fact. That is true. And they're doing a much better job of that than they did 10 years ago. That having been said, there are all sorts of players that are falling through the cracks, which is why, and this is a different discussion, Chris, but this is why they cannot be allowed to monopolize the system within the United States. Obviously, we have a situation now in Indianapolis, which has developed in the last week, which is complicated. I don't want to say it's a black and white issue, as some are portrayed it, as in just a straight MLS versus USL issue. But he seems to want this is why I bring this whole subject up. Based on the quotes in your piece this morning, he wants some sort of market protections in the United States, where they are the leader of the market in the United States, which he says, maybe correctly, football is kind of dependent as a global sport on the U.S. market. He wants market protections to continue that leadership position, while not wanting similar market protections within the domestic market. Right. So that they can go ahead and devour the competition domestically while saying, hey, because we're the largest league in the world, you know, his exact quote, with 30 teams in the United States and Canada, we're the largest league in the world by a lot. We've also got the largest market in the world by a lot. Our opportunity is to lead this, is to lead a soccer nation. That quote reflects to me a desire to, hey, we're the leaders. We deserve some market protection. Everybody else can have their little pieces of the pie, but we deserve market protection. While at the same time, domestically, MLS is saying, we don't want other leagues and other entities to have any share of the market. We want to devour them. So that's why, to me, it's kind of fundamentally hypocritical. Not that the audience in Germany or the writers who came from the UK would know the domestic situation here, because on the surface, Garber's quotes are very reasonable from where I sit, because I do agree with him. To a large extent on how he's characterizing the soccer nation and European leagues. However, it does not reflect MLS's own actions and behavior domestically in this country, in the domestic market.
Yeah, that's some great analysis there, Kartik. And like I said before, too, you often have to read between the lines of what he says, because, I mean, I think when he mentions with 30 teams in the US and Canada, we are the largest league in the world by a lot. I think what he means, definitely what he means, is a single top flight division. And they've done that before in the past, too, where they've bragged about, hey, we have the biggest league in the world. And I'm like, who cares? That's actually a negative in many ways, because, I mean, it's not like the Premier League or Bundesliga or whoever is bragging about having 18 or 20 teams. If anything, it's probably better to have fewer teams. So it's, rather than 29 right now, 30 soon, maybe 31 with Indianapolis. I mean, it just kind of this ever burgeoning league where everyone kind of gets lost in this puzzle, and you're moving teams from the Eastern Conference to the Western Conference.
So this is a little off topic, but I do want to bring this up really quickly here, Chris. There has been a lot of discussion I've been having in the last couple of weeks about the Bundesliga and now Liga 1 being 18 teams versus the 20 team leagues in top divisions in England, Spain, and Italy, and how advantageous it is in people's minds for Germany and France to only have 18 teams and therefore less games, and how that may be affecting the success of both of those leagues in European competition this year. So to your point, sometimes it's advantageous to have less teams. And we're about to embark, maybe by the time people listen to this, they'll know the results of the first legs of the Champions League. We're about to embark on Champions League semifinals, where three of the four teams are from leagues with 18 teams, with less teams than those other leagues. So Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that he gives this quote now, because I've been having a lot of conversations about, hey, maybe La Liga and the Premier League and Serie A, maybe they need to drop to 18 teams. That's mm-hmm. more of a conversation the last few weeks than I've heard in recent years, honestly.
Yeah, the thing with Don Garber is that and Major League Soccer is really what they want at the end of the day is to be the NFL of soccer in the United States. Right. So it's in the United States, if you're a fan of American football at a professional level, it's the NFL. It's not the NFL against the CFL. It's just NFL is the league. Same thing with baseball. Major League Baseball is the league. Same thing with the NBA, basketball. NBA is the league. Now with soccer, MLS wants to be the league. However, we know, obviously, the competition that they have from globally, where Major League Baseball, NFL, and to a lesser degree, NBA doesn't have that really kind of global competition. So that's what they want. But your point too, Kartik, about Garber being hypocritical, I agree. Because it's like in terms of protecting MLS and all the investment that they've made into the game can be looked at as kind of like, hey, back off foreign leagues. We've put a lot of money into developing in the game in the United States. However, at the same time, then too, that they're also saying, hey, back off USL, back off NISA, back off these teams in the United States. We want to control the entire pie, every piece of the pie, from the youth level all the way through, even on the girls' side, but all the way through up to the men's league, to the top flight league. So, this one, I really like that Don Garber was honest, well, opened up and talked about this rather than saying we're not going to talk about this at all. He didn't have to say these things, but often with Don Garber, what he says is actually it requires a deeper read or a deeper listen to actually kind of to figure out what he's actually trying to say sometimes, because there's some deeper levels on it. So while I was there, Kartik, I had to ask him about the Apple deal too, because there's so much. So much of topics of this podcast and the website have been focused on the Apple deal. I asked him more from a German angle, which was that we reported last year that Apple had been in talks with the Bundesliga. Nothing too serious, but just having talks, finding out a little bit more about each other, learning about what Apple's doing, learning what the Bundesliga's doing. At the same time, just this past week or so, there was a report that the FIFA Club World Cup rights may go to Apple for the 2025 season. And we had an article at worldsoccertalk.com that said, like, hey, well, if they're going for the FIFA Club World Cup, why not the World Cup? Why not some of these other leagues and competitions that Apple could conceivably have the rights to in the future? So I asked Don Garber about that and whether or not he would welcome the Bundesliga and the FIFA Club World Cup to be added to Apple in the future, if that was a possibility. And Don Garber says, we think Apple TV is the next generation for a productive, efficient viewer experience. And if Apple were to form partnerships with anyone else in the football world, I think it would be great for them. Whatever partner they would sign up, and it'd be great for Major League Soccer. We were first movers in this space. That's an MLS quality. And I can't imagine that there won't be more deals like this. And we're hopeful that Apple is as ambitious with the rest of their experience and desires in football as they've been with us. So there wasn't any from Don Garber saying like, well, the FIFA Club World Cup thing, that's not going to happen. Or the Bundesliga, that's not going to happen. He just said that, hey, the more the merrier. If you want to come on board, we'll certainly be part of that same platform. And I think it would benefit Major League Soccer as a whole. Can you read anything more into that, Kartik, or any more insights?
Yeah, so I actually agree with him when he says that Apple is a productive, efficient viewer experience. That I agree with. Again, this past weekend, the other big league in the United States is USL, right? No disrespect towards NISA and PSL, et cetera, but other big league on the men's side. So I attend a match, USL match. I come home and say, okay, I'm going to check out the late matches, the West Coast matches. And they're split between ESPN Plus and Golazzo. And, you know, it's sometimes tough to kind of, oh, geez, this match must be on Golazzo. Now, I probably should be checking the World Soccer Talk, the TV listings on worldsoccertalk.com, but it just isn't on my mind. So I'm flipping for games, right? Well, why isn't the Sacramento game on here? And so I do think that there's a certain efficiency to Apple having every MLS match, which quite frankly, USL doesn't have, although you could argue USL gets more exposure because the partners they have, but you still have to kind of be aware of where every match is being aired. But I do think also that this would be beneficial to MLS if there were other football properties on Apple TV, because I do think the promotion that the heavy promotion that Apple puts into MLS is really going into kind of vapor in many cases, because by and large, soccer fans, football fans are not on Apple TV. Now, if they were on, if the Bundesliga moved, if Liga hypothetically moved, Club World Cup, maybe this is a gateway to get people to sign up for MLS season pass. So I do think there is some truth to this, because MLS has gone ahead of the curve and jumped onto a TV, onto a media property, created a media relationship with someone else that has nothing else going on in the game other than documentaries and occasional miniseries, right, on football. So I think that there is some truth to what Garber says. But once again, Chris, you can question the wisdom of jumping out ahead of everybody else, when in fact MLS is not in the financially advantageous position that would necessarily make them a smart trendsetter, right? Maybe it's someone else who has a greater following and greater cash reserves and the ability to absorb not being on mainstream linear television in a big way for multiple seasons, that should have set the trend rather than Major League Soccer. But it is what it is. They've done what they've done. And I do agree with Garber's statement in the sense that this will help MLS if these other properties were on Apple TV.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I find it interesting sometimes, like, just to ask people, like, so we had, I mean, basically, what, about four journalists from the US and on this media trip, as well as maybe four or five content creators. Some of them were YouTubers or TikTokers, but it was a group of journalists and media, mostly about half from the US and about the other half from Europe. And I mean, when we had some downtime, we did talk about, I mean, streaming. That was a topic that came up naturally. Out of all the people that were there, in terms of MLS season pass, I think myself, and one other journalist were the only ones that had MLS season pass. The journalist got it as part of the having a season ticket to his favorite MLS team. So we were the only two out of all these journalists and kind of content creators that had MLS season pass. And so I wanted to find out why they didn't have it. Why aren't you subscribing? The number one complaint was the price. The second biggest complaint was that they thought that they would have to subscribe to Apple TV Plus in order to get MLS season pass and then pay a second time. And that's something we're now well past 14 months or up to 15 months of MLS season pass being out there. But that is the perception I keep on hearing quite often still, that still people think that they have to go ahead and subscribe to two services just to get MLS season pass. And they haven't been able to overcome that. They haven't been able to kind of break down those walls to really kind of educate everybody. Maybe it'll take a few more years at this rate. But the feeling I got from everyone was that Actually, some of the reporters were saying that they just watch the social media highlights. They just watch it on YouTube the day after and catch up that way to see what they missed. But the perception that I think Don Garber and a lot of people like to put out there is that the world is watching. Everyone's tuning in to see what's happening with Leo Messi. And it's not happening, Carter.
Yeah, and Chris, this is where I get frustrated on social media, because you have these people who come back with any critique of TV number or TV numbers, Fox numbers, et cetera, saying, oh, well, there are hundreds of thousands of people on who are watching on Apple. They've sold this number of subscriptions, which, by the way, was last year, and a lot of it was Messi contingent. So we don't know the numbers for this year yet, because I'm just going to tell you this as someone who's actually sold sponsorships and tickets in this sport in the United States, that there was naturally a drop off from year one to year two. Just in general, that's what happens. My frustration is that I work in the game. I talk in the game, right? I live and breathe this stuff. And I'm talking to so many people every day that are in the game. And I'm not going to obviously name names here and betray anyone's confidence. I cannot believe the number of people I talk to that have worked in MLS, that may still work in MLS or cover MLS, that have not subscribed. I mean, it just blows my mind.
Wow.
And the complaints are very similar to what those journalists articulated to you on the trip. I thought I had to have Apple TV Plus, and I'll say, no, you don't. Oh, but I still then I have to pay $15 a month and not $13 a month. I said, yes. Oh, well, I'm not going to do that. Also the just the general complaint that there isn't a real kind of robust mechanism with MLS stuff going on during the week where people can catch up. And it's to the point where I guess to a lot of these people, Chris, it's no different than going on the streaming services after the fact on Sunday and Monday and going back and watching USL matches or NWSL matches, the other two large leagues in the United States. And those streaming services are services they already subscribe to. Those streaming services are services that are more mainstream, that cover those. We can argue about ION, right? But otherwise, the services that carry NWSL are mainstream. And then obviously every service that covers USL is very mainstream. It's either a CBS-related service or ESPN-related service. And the people working in the sport are telling me, you know, it's just much easier for me. It's the ease of access beyond the money. So this is a double thing, and this is not something I anticipate. I'll admit I was wrong before this deal. When this deal was made, I think I'm trying to remember what you said, Chris, but I thought it was, hey, Apple TV Plus has become more mainstream, although it still lags well behind the other streaming services. In fact, I recently saw a thing where I think they were ranked last in terms of, you know, some of the metrics. I was wrong in thinking, oh, well, you know, we'll just see a wholesale change. The people who have been watching ESPN Plus or Paramount Plus, they'll just switch to Apple. That hasn't happened. And these are people who work in the domestic game, Chris. These aren't people who are sitting in front of their televisions watching the Premier League Saturday morning or the Bundesliga Saturday morning. they already had ESPN and Paramount for ESPN Plus and Paramount Plus for other purposes. And maybe they did get it initially because La Liga was on there or whatever, but they don't watch it as closely. And they're just saying, okay, well, I'm just going to partake in the leagues that are on those services and not get anything related to Apple. And I think that that's, I actually think that that is something I didn't anticipate at all. So that is something MLS needs to fix. And I think part of it starts with just doing the very basic things you've done, Chris, which is explain that this is not as cumbersome and difficult in terms of accessing the content or paying for the content as many people seem to perceive it is. Even people working in the game perceive it is.
Yeah, I think this is a little bit, actually quite a bit, a smoke and mirrors by Major League Soccer. Because at the end of the day, I mean, Apple has paid, yes, $250 million a year to Major League Soccer for the rights for the next 10 years. But Apple, I mean, in terms of the priority within Apple Corporation, this is a tiny, tiny, tiny little thing that's not probably generating a ton of money for Apple. But yeah, sure, they want to, it's something they want to get more into. So they're using this. Pardon me, I'm using this as a blueprint, kind of a plan to see how does this work. How can we go ahead and work out the kinks, figure out a way to what works, what doesn't work. So if and when in the future we do acquire the rights to the Premier League or to the World Cup or to whatever, you know, FIFA Club World Cup, what do we have to do in order to make this right? What works, what doesn't work? What needs to change with the user interface? What needs to change as far as the messaging, all these things. So for Apple, it isn't as big of a deal because basically, you mean, it's a tiny little bit of money for them. And they're using this as a learning experience for bigger and better things in the future. For Major League Soccer, this is huge. This Major League Soccer wants to hit that threshold of subscribers that they have not reached yet, where they will get a 50-50 rev share with Apple. And they'll be able to make 50 cents on every dollar, beyond once they have to hit that threshold, which is an incredible opportunity to make some additional money that is not offered to other leagues. I mean, this is something new and very aggressive in many ways. And as Don Garber has said before, this is a risk. This is the risk that they're willing to take, is that they're betting on the future, future growth of subscribers so that they can make more money as the league grows. But the smoke and mirrors aspect of this is that we're not getting any viewership numbers. We don't know really how many subscribers there are. We've been told by the end of last year it was about 2 million, but how many of those are paid? So this year we know that T-Mobile's not doing their free offer. So now how many subscribers are subscribed to MLS Season Pass? Is it 1 million, right? It could have dropped that much, or is it 1.5 million? Whatever it may be, whatever that number is. So MLS is playing a game. The game that they're playing is trying to make sure that everyone's happy. So if you're an Audi, which you see those ads all the time, annoying as they are, Audi and Goldfish and all the brands that you see advertised on MLS 360 and on the games, they haven't been told, as far as we know, what the viewership number is, how many people are actually watching those ads, but they're betting this on the future. So they may not know the detail of how successful or how not successful MLS Season Pass is. At the same time, MLS is still bringing in more and more sponsors, doing bigger commercial deals and selling the league and saying, look how great this is that we have Apple. So the smoke and mirrors is that there's no numbers out there to show whether or not this is successful. But let's kind of build this mysteria, this kind of environment where things are great. It's wonderful. We have Messi and look how great this is. Look at our social media interactions and how many retweets we're getting and things like that. But at the end of the day, like, how many people are actually paying for MLS Season Pass? And Apple knows the number. MLS knows the number. They're not willing to share that number. So what does that tell you? that there isn't a good story to tell, that they want to be very secretive. And at some point in the future, perhaps they'll release those numbers, or maybe they never will. But by building that smoke and mirrors and kind of making people believe that this is the most wonderful thing ever, they're winning the game.
They're winning the game in some senses, but they're not winning the game maybe monetarily or financially, which is really what matters in this, because these are business decisions, right? I mean, this isn't about what someone on Twitter says when you put out numbers, as you do, Chris, often, and then someone comes back and says, well, you're not counting the millions of people watching on MLS Season Pass, and even though there were only 150,000 on FS1 or whatever. That they may be winning the battle on social media, but that is smoke and mirrors, right? That is irrelevant to the reality of the financial situation and whether or not this deal is going to be financially lucrative enough over the long term for individual owner operators of MLS clubs. Because remember, MLS doesn't have franchises. You buy into the league and you get a portion of the league. That's the single entity structure. Is this going to be lucrative enough over 10 years for those individual owner operators to say, yeah, it was worth it that we took the Houston Dynamo off of local television, or it was worth it that we took the Columbus Crew off of local television, and that we don't have any matches on ESPN, and that, you know, whether you agree with this or not, because I do think SportsCenter historically was editorially independent from Disney's rights holding machine, but now it's clear that there's a bias in what SportsCenter selects for SportsCenter. Was it worth it to not have our highlights on SportsCenter? Was it worth it to not have ESPN talking about it? Those are the metrics that matter. Not, oh, you know, Chris, you're not representing, World Soccer Talk isn't representing the massive Apple number, and I'm going to own you on social media and say millions are watching, and this is disingenuous. Even though their pushback is based entirely on assumptions and maybe wishful thinking, that really doesn't matter. So I don't think they're winning necessarily. I think they may be winning this very superficial battle on social media. But look, if you're an individual MLS owner and you've invested in the league, I am sure you are expressing concern in the boardroom right now about this deal. And the deal, whether or not you're going to see massive upticks in numbers. Now, I'm sure the pushback, just to finish here, Chris, from MLS internally is after World Cup 2026. Well, Copa America this summer, then World Club Cup, then World Cup 2026. We now know Women's World Cup 2027 is not going to be in the United States or in North America. So those three summers in a row, we will get this uptick in subscriptions. We'll get to the 50-50 revenue share. You'll make your money back, et cetera. But
yeah, I think
they're really counting on that. And regardless of what's being represented publicly, I think privately there's probably some nervousness.
Yeah, they're definitely counting on Copa America to a lesser extent. But you mean hoping and praying that Messi wins Copa America with Argentina, and that would give a bounce to MLS Season Pass subscribers for the second half of the season. Hey, now come watch him play on his club team. 2026 is the big payoff, right? So they're banking on that, hoping that that's going to kind of basically change Major League Soccer in a positive way, more revenue coming into the game, more advertisers, sponsors, signups, etc. That's going to happen naturally. There's no guarantee of that, but that's what they're banking on. But I think they're winning the game, as in that they're controlling the message and they're controlling the viewership numbers. So when you don't release the viewership numbers and then you control the message by saying this is, you mean, how great it is, isn't it wonderful, that there's no other information out there, it to me makes me, and I think others too, other journalists have felt the same way about this, suspect in terms of, like, I mean, why is there a lack of transparency? Why is there so little information being shared other than, like, saying that, yeah, this is wonderful, this is great, isn't this wonderful, how great we're doing?
Yeah, I'll say another place where they're not winning. You talk about those MLS sponsors and the need to keep them on board, and MLS has done a great job via Soccer United Marketing with getting sponsors. They lost their initial batch of sponsors that they had from the launch in 96, and they've replenished that and more, right? They have a great sponsorship portfolio if you go on their website now and you see. But where they've left the door open, I have to say this as someone who covers and works in the lower divisions. USL, I criticized for years for not having any really meaningful sponsors, right? USL would throw out, we have a partnership with this one, that one. It was all smoke and mirrors, right? Using your same term. It was all, okay, they really had a barter deal with this thing or the preferred vendor status, but they weren't really getting monetary sponsorships. Suddenly, and maybe it's a reflection of USL getting its act together also, but probably more, in my opinion, a reflection of MLS going to Apple. Suddenly, USL is getting national sponsors and getting monetary sponsors and getting to the point where they can divide some of that sponsorship revenue with their clubs and they can offset some of the costs of media and other things that apply to their clubs. So there is an opportunity cost, again, to this Apple deal that was not something I had anticipated 18 months ago when, or almost 2 years ago when the deal was signed, when I thought it was great. It's really left the door open, and I need to analyze what's happened with NWSL also. Truthfully, I haven't, but I might be saying the same thing. They opened the door for more sponsors for them, although there's some cross-ownership with MLS, obviously. They opened the door for more TV revenue, et cetera, et cetera. So there's an opportunity cost to this also with sponsors and domestic competition.
Yeah, I think, I mean, the reality is both you and I watch MLS Season Pass. We pay for MLS Season Pass. I like watching it every weekend. I mean, it's one of the things I look forward to watching it. I mean, the service itself is great in terms of once you sign up and once you pay for it. Yes, it could be better. There's always room for improvement. It's not what I thought it would be. I thought it would be a lot more original content on there. But at the end of the day, I'm tuning in to watch the games, and I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's not the best league in the world, but it's entertaining. But having said all of that, though, too, that I'm disappointed with the lack of signups to MLS Season Pass. It just seems that, again, just as it happened last year, right before Messi joined, it's hit a plateau. It seems to be, yes, ticket sales are doing great. I mean, record-breaking attendances in Kansas City, and probably this July at the Rose Bowl in California, and all around Major League Soccer, wherever Inter Miami goes, those are doing well. There's an uptick there. I'm sure there's an uptick in attendance across the league. That's doing great. But where it matters the most for us, which is what we cover the most, which is the television and streaming side of things, I don't know. It just seems to have been the last couple of months since the season started. Once the first couple of weeks are over, no one's really talking about MLS Season Pass. It's really quiet out there.
Yeah, and this is, again, to your point, I enjoy the product in terms of the matches. But again, I cover a USL team closely, so I'm at games more Saturday nights, so I'm not able to watch 360 live or any of that. And a team that has had a front-loaded home schedule, so I think during the summer I'll be able to watch more of Season Pass live. But I'm disappointed by the lack of original content. That's something I just did not anticipate. That was one of my big excitements about things, was that I said, okay, now MLS can have like a proper division, like Premier League Productions that produces all this content. I actually was involved in the development of one of Premier League Productions shows, Premier League World shows, when yep. they featured a couple of NASL players who formerly played in the Premier League, and that this could be like NFL Films, etc. And that just hasn't happened. And that is something that blows my mind, that hasn't happened, because that is the gateway in for so many people. I mean, I think people who've long-term been in television and media, including Seth Bacon, right, including the guy who's directing this at MLS, understand that normally you need some sort of magazine show or some sort of other content to hook people. Welcome to Wrexham. I know this becomes a sore spot with MLS fans whenever we bring up Wrexham, but welcome to Wrexham. That's, you know, the premium example, but you can still do that on kind of a lesser level if you have some sort of documentary about Save the Crew, which we know they won't do. We've talked about that before. But some sort of cool aspect of MLS supporters culture or the history of the sport in the places MLS is in. They haven't done that. And as a result, there's not much buzz about this stuff. And Chris, again, it's anecdotal. It's just as anecdotal as the people who come back at you and say, oh, well, hundreds of thousands of people are watching on Apple TV. But this is anecdotal. I'm finding far more buzz and interest about USL this season, which heartens me as a lower division person, but worries me as someone who wants MLS to succeed long term than I have ever heard before. And I'm, you know, part of me is kicking myself saying, hey, I was directing communications for the NASL 10 years ago. Why couldn't I create this sort of critical mass of interest that seems to be percolating around USL this season? But I also recognize that when I was running communications for the NASL, MLS was on mainstream platforms, and now they're not. And USL is on mainstream platforms. So there is a direct correlation to all of this stuff, which, you know, again, maybe it was worth it, though, just for the money. But I do think it's reducing the buzz, the exposure, and outside of the messy conversation, we're not talking nearly enough about MLS in general. You know, you said it's not the best league in the world. I don't know that that's true. It might be the best league in the world. We really don't know. But the conversation's not being had because not enough people are watching it to determine whether maybe the level in terms of level of football consistently is better than the leagues in Europe and South America, or whether that it's not, because not enough people are watching to even have the conversation is my point.
Yeah, which is a scary situation to be in, that you have a major league, I mean, in theory, in the United States, the top flight league, and for the most part, people aren't watching it. But then you have advertisers that are paying, I'm sure, big dollars, big time dollars to sponsor these shows and have their ads run. And then the information, the numbers aren't being shared. I mean, the other thing then too, behind the scenes, at the end of the day, those expansion checks coming through. So if they do get Indianapolis as Team 31, or Las Vegas comes at Team 32, and so on and so forth, that seems to be the greatest generator of wealth for MLS owners. And $250 million per year sounds like a lot of money for Major League Soccer. It's greater than what it was before. But 10 years from now, it's still $250 million unless they can hit that threshold. And $250 million 10 years from now probably is not going to, it's definitely not going to sound like a lot of money. And that number, that $250 million too, doesn't factor in the production costs that MLS are paying to actually produce everything themselves. So you have to minus that from the 250.
And by the way, I've heard that just from my sourcing, that has not gone as cleanly, the whole MLS productions side, as had hoped, which that part doesn't surprise me, because they were ramping it up really quickly. And that was one concern I expressed at the outset of the Apple deal, that they were going to have to go through this sort of level of production. And that the reality of the situation was, with the other two big leagues in this country, USL and NWSL, it took years and lots of kind of kinks as they set up their own production arms for it to work efficiently. Now USL Productions is flawless, but it's taken 8 years to get to this point. So you can't just flip a switch. Unless you're going to subcontract to IMG or someone who really has an expertise in this, which, of course, the Predator League did, TWI, IMG, et cetera. It was a massive undertaking, and maybe a level of undertaking MLS's executives, including Seth Bacon, the aforementioned Seth Bacon, really didn't understand, didn't realize how difficult and tough this was going to be. And this might account for why we haven't seen that original programming that I so badly want to see. And I think... yeah. From my perspective, would be a gateway for people to sign up for MLS Season Pass on Apple TV. I mean, even if Apple TV Plus had the documentaries or that original programming as something separate from Season Pass, I think it would still stimulate signups, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, they had the two messy documentaries, the one that came out last summer and then the one that came out right before this season started, MLS season started. Those seem to have not really done much at all. Major League Soccer does have that that deal with the Drive to Survive production team that's putting together kind of a behind the scenes documentary series that should come out probably in the summer. But to be honest with you, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, has there been anything amazing that's happened this MLS season so far where it would really get you really excited about watching that docuseries to see what happened behind the scenes? And so far, I mean, it's Messi scoring goals galore, and for the most part doing well in front of sold out stadiums. There's been a couple of controversies, but very minor, that have been kind of swept under the carpet, that we didn't find out exactly what happened at a couple of different clubs. They've controlled that message again. So, I mean, yeah, Columbus doing well, but there's not really anything you can sink your teeth into.
Well, Columbus doing well speaks to this whole thing, because the most natural story is save the crew. And I will also say Columbus has become effectively the flagship club of this league. And it is arguably Soccer City USA now, with fair shouts to St. Louis and Portland and other places, Detroit, with Detroit City supporters. But there seems to be a reluctance, not only because of Save the Crew, but also because of the size of the market, because this is the way MLS thinks, to promote Columbus as that flagship club, that original MLS club that is still clicking on all cylinders, that original MLS club that has been good generation to generation. They were the next best team behind DC in the East in the 90s. In the 2000s, they won a couple supporter shields and they won an MLS Cup, right? They won, I think, three supporter shields or two or three supporter shields. We know they won an MLS Cup in the 2010s, and now they've won an MLS Cup after all the Save the Crew stuff in the 2020s. That is the best story MLS has, is Columbus. Absolutely, positively. And it's a story that would translate globally, in my opinion. But they don't want to play it. So it's also because of market size. It's not just because of the Save the Crew element. They think it's this, you know, this piddly market that they were saddled with. It's why they were all for what Drecourt tried to do with the club and relocate it. Because they think in those terms, which is not the way to think about this sport. This isn't the NFL. This isn't the NBA. This is a very organic, community-based sport. And Columbus is the model in MLS.
Yeah, and we'll have to wait and see as far as that Netflix... it should be on Netflix, but it's not. That documentary that's going to be on Apple TV+. So even if you have MLS Season Pass, you're probably not going to be able to actually watch it. You have to then pay extra to watch it on Apple TV+ to watch that series. And will they share the truth? Will they tell the story as it actually happened with Columbus? And yeah, that would be interesting, right? In terms of kind of the story, the backstory, how they got to where they are and how they're doing, and the coach, and you mean Cucho Hernandez, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All right, Kartik and listeners, let us know what you're thinking. You can call us to leave a voicemail at 561-247-4625. You can email us at web@worldsoccertalk.com. Or you can post your comments on our website at worldsoccertalk.com in the podcast section in the most recent episode. If you're on social media, tweet us at worldsoccertalk. Post your comments in youtube.com/worldsoccertalk. Or send us a message at facebook.com/worldsoccertalk. We'll read out your comments, notes, or suggestions on the next episode. Before we go, Kartik, what's going on at Beyond the 90? What are the listeners missing if they're not subscribed already?
Yeah, lots of soccer wars content with the Indy situation. My colleague Callum Ewing had an exclusive interview with the president of the Brickyard Battalion that ran this morning. They are very much hedging, which may surprise a lot of people. The assumption was that they would line up behind USL and Indy 11. They're in fact having a meeting with the city council tomorrow. So there are a lot of nuances to the Indianapolis situation. It's not really a black and white USL versus MLS situation. Although my preference still would be that there would be the USL club there and not the MLS club. We'll have to see what happens. In addition to other coverage of USL and lower division soccer, and possibly some coverage of Europe coming up. I still want to do a little more on Bayer Leverkusen, especially if They can see out this treble, which incredibly enough, we didn't talk about it on this podcast. Incredibly enough, once again, it's written in the stars, right? How they got that equalizer against Stuttgart, literally the last kick of the match. And that is, Chris, I believe double-digit stoppage time goals now for Bayer Leverkusen this season. I think it's like 11 or 12 stoppage time goals. I have to actually go back and count. But offhand, I can think of at least 10. Unbelievable. What a team.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was watching that game at a sidewalk cafe restaurant in Leipzig. And just watching the game intently, thinking that finally, a team is going to defeat Bayer Leverkusen and break that record, and then they come back and score that injury time equalizer. Just everyone erupted in the street and in the cafe that was watching it, and you could hear people just shouting in excitement or just in groans as that happened. But really exciting times in the Bundesliga. In terms of coverage, worldsoccertalk.com, we have the story that goes in more in depth about what Don Garber said, additional details. He talks about Messi, he talks about the growth of soccer in the United States. And we'll have stories this week, too, about RB Leipzig and their training academy and some of the things that's going on there. This past weekend, we interviewed Benjamin Sesko, so we've got a story about that and his interest in the NBA and much, much more, including RB Leipzig is coming to the United States this summer to play a friendly against Aston Villa at Red Bull Arena in Harrison, New Jersey, and a whole bunch of more details. So listeners, thank you for your patience. Thank you for listening. We'll be back probably in a couple of weeks. We've been doing fewer episodes, but they've been longer in content. Hopefully you like that format. And in the meantime, thanks for listening and enjoy your football.
Up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.